From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Although President Trump has just over a week left in his term, constitutional issues are front and center. There have been calls to remove him under the 25th Amendment. The U.S. House of Representatives is again moving to impeach. And what about those pardons? We'll talk about that and more with a constitutional law scholar later in the program. But first, the Illinois General Assembly has been meeting in Springfield since late last week. It's the first days of session since last May, and they've been busy. On the policy front, the Black Caucus's agenda for racial, economic, and criminal justice is getting much of the focus. But as significant as that is, there's even greater attention to a political fight in the Illinois House. Speaker Michael J. Madigan, a Democrat from Chicago, could be coming to the end of four decades in power. He was first elected to lead his caucus in 1981 as minority leader and rose to speaker the next term when his party captured the majority. He's been speaker for all but 2 years since 1983. Those 2 years were when Republicans briefly relegated Democrats to the minority after the 1994 Contract with America wave election. But the times have been changing. Madigan's organization has been rocked by Me Too allegations, though not against him directly. And there's been a major scandal involving electric utility ComEd and some of Madigan's closest allies. The company has admitted it tried to influence the speaker, but Madigan has not been charged with a crime and has denied wrongdoing. That, however, may not matter. A few years ago, after he was again elected chairman of the Democratic Party of Illinois, I asked Madigan about the fact that, in public opinion polling, his popularity had gotten so low he was becoming a liability for down-ballot candidates.
Let me say this. If the amount of money spent on negative advertising against me had been spent against you, your poll numbers would be in bad shape, too. And let me make this point. All that money was spent on negative advertising on me without response. Without response. Again, this speaks to the dynamic in Illinois politics and government brought on by Rounder's spending of his personal money. It's made a big difference.
But was that malpractice to not respond? I mean, it's now down ballot candidates are constantly asked, do you support Speaker Madigan? That's been used against them.
That's been used by Republicans for about 10 years. It was used by some Democrats in the Democratic primary. The ones in the Democratic primary that used that lost their elections. And Rounder's going to lose his election. So,
Speaker, Congresswoman Kelly talked about that.
After more than a decade of attacks from Republicans, as we heard, now some Democrats are saying it's time for Speaker Madigan to go. On Monday, he announced he would be suspending his campaign for Speaker, not withdrawing, just suspending. To find out what that means, we're joined by two reporters who've been following what's happening in the Illinois General Assembly. Hannah Meisel is a State House reporter for NPR Illinois, public radio station WUIS, a member station where the 21st is broadcast. Hannah, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
And we're also joined by Rick Pearson, chief political reporter at the Chicago Tribune, who has been following Speaker Madigan's career from the State House, from the newsroom in Chicago for much of his tenure. Rick, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming back on.
Thank you, Brian.
Hannah, let's begin with some basics before we get into the speaker. For listeners who might not follow this stuff day in, day out like you do, what is a lame duck session? What is the General Assembly doing sort of big picture right now?
Oh, sure. So, you know, every 2 years after the election, a new General Assembly has to be seated, but that doesn't happen until about mid-January. And so this week it's on Wednesday. But, you know, before then, lawmakers, you know, traditionally get back together one last time. And while those outgoing legislators are quote unquote lame ducks and, you know, don't really have any political consequences to worry about necessarily anymore, you know, they can come back to Springfield and I guess you could say vote your conscience, though, you know, typically folks stick with their party and, you know, the obligations there. But, you know, it's a chance to finish up old business before those bills that people have worked so hard on, you know, kind of reset to zero, where they are in the process.
And where, because of the pandemic, as I mentioned, the legislature has not met since May of last year. Where are they meeting? What does it look like this session?
So the Senate is meeting where it usually meets, in their Senate chambers in the Capitol building. But for the second time, you mentioned back in May, the House is again meeting in this, in the Bank of Springfield Center. It's a massive 40,000 square foot convention center in downtown Springfield. And they're all spread out on the floor. Each member gets their own little table 6 feet away from each other. Everyone has to be masked at all times. And, you know, there's also increased security presence because of what we saw at the U.S. Capitol last week, and, you know, just other general threats, you know, of armed protesters. Whether or not that comes true, obviously, we all hope that doesn't. But, you know, the governor's office, the state police says that they're ready.
Yeah, and the FBI had a bulletin just yesterday warning of possible attempts at armed incursions at state capitals, just as we saw at the U.S. Capitol last week. Okay, I want to come back to what lawmakers are actually working on in terms of policy during lame duck session. But first, the big issue, as I said, is obviously the future of the Democratic caucus in the Illinois House. Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune, I was perusing my old clip file of Madigan stories I've collected over the years, some since before I was a reporter. And I'm looking at a few Tribune headlines here. 1986, Steve Neal, Madigan could be our next ex-speaker. And then 1993, Thomas Hardy, in the twilight of his Springfield years, Madigan sees a shrinking empire.
You've been looking at the same ones I have.
Yeah. Well, and then there's this one from 2021. In politically calculated move, Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan suspends bid for another term, but doesn't bow out. Of course, that was by you and your colleagues, Dan Petrella and Jamie Monks, I think in this morning's paper online yesterday. What is different in 2021? This is not the first time. The reports of Speaker Madigan's demise have come previously. What's different this time?
Sure. And you've kind of cited out kind of the first beginnings of the cracks were the issues surrounding the Me Too movement. And Madigan's success over the years has always been an ability to adjust to changing times. And with problems in his government staff, his political staff that forced him to fire some top political and governmental aides over sexual harassment issues, that kind of revealed the first crack. And this was occurring at the same time that Madigan had done a lot of work to broaden and diversify the caucus, including more women who are a significant number in the caucus, particularly in the Chicago suburbs, which had demographically always been kind of a Republican stronghold. It's one of the areas where Madigan's been successful in his map-making ability, bringing more women in. So that was the first crack. But then when you saw what happened in November, it was very obvious that you had leading Democrats in the state blaming Madigan for the failure of either their initiatives or allies. Governor Pritzker over the defeat of his graduated income tax rate proposal. It lost because opposition was, can you really trust Springfield? Code word, can you really trust Mike Madigan? Then you had in the defeat of retention of Justice Kilbride, which was heavily Madigan aimed, you know, Mike Madigan's favorite Supreme Court justice. And then, you know, in central Illinois, the defeat of Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan, who had come so close 2 years earlier to defeating Republican Congressman Rodney Davis. There was no secret that Dick Durbin blamed that on distaste with Mike Madigan. You have some very powerful figures here, and that's kind of what started the snowball here towards deciding Madigan's future.
And Rick, you've talked about, you alluded to it briefly a moment ago, but I've seen you write about his adaptability, right? This is a guy who, if you drill into his heart, he's probably a conservative Democrat, right? Pro-life initially. He's a Catholic in what we used to call ethnic Catholic,
yeah,
Chicago Democrat.
A Reagan Democrat kind
right.
of thing.
But he has adapted himself, and, you know, this is a guy who, when Illinois approved same-sex marriage, was quoting the Pope saying, who am I to judge, right?
Right. Basically enshrining abortion rights in Illinois state law. I mean, he's very much of the ideology of Bill Lipinski and his son Dan Lipinski, who was just defeated by Marie Newman in the Southwest Side, Southwest suburbs of Chicago. Very much of that old bungalow belt, socially conservative mentality. But you know, it's all about the votes, and Madigan traditionally has only asked for one vote, as that's what he says, and that is to make him speaker after the election. But there were so many people this time in the rank and file Democrats in the House who, even though COVID limited their ability to go out and door-to-door campaign, whatever, were basically, they found out that when they wanted to make their sales pitch on why they ought to be elected, the only question that they really got from their constituents was, are you going to vote for Mike Madigan? And, well, Rick, and that's a success of Bruce Rauner and the spending that he ran against him.
Yeah. Rick, I'm glad you mentioned that, because Hannah, I want to come back to you now. I mean, Rick mentioned the sort of top level dissatisfaction from Governor Pritzker, Senator Dick Durbin. But it was really rank and file women in the Illinois House, for the most part, at least, who first came out and said that they were not going to support the speaker for re-election. Right, Hannah?
Yes, that's exactly right. And like you mentioned, these cracks started appearing about 3 years ago when Madigan's political staffer, Elena Hampton, went public with her story that, you know, her complaints about sexual harassment within Madigan's 13th Ward Democratic organization had gone, you know, completely unheard, unaddressed, and she had had enough. And so she came out. That was almost 3 years ago. And, you know, since then, it's just, you know, right, like you said, snowballing. And, you know, it came to a head this summer when those charging, you know, the deferred prosecution agreement, you know, was filed against ComEd, where, again, the company admitted that they had engaged in a years-long bribery scheme to curry favor with the speaker. And so it was at that point, the women, again, who came forward first and said, you know, if these are true, then we can't vote for him. And then that quickly turned into, you know, whether or not this is true, we can't vote for him anyway, because he is damaging our caucus. And it, you know, it, all these, the timing of these things is just so interesting. I mean, like, when this comes out in a year where everything's a pressure cooker politically anyway, between COVID and, you know, social unrest and, you know, Black Americans demanding equality, you know, at the doors, those folks, especially the suburban women in those traditionally GOP districts that they would like to keep Democratic for a while, you know, they're hearing those questions. And the speaker has always been all about amassing his power and making sure to protect his vulnerable members. Well, he can't protect his vulnerable members anymore because he is literally the issue. And so they feel a little bit like, well, you know, if you truly recognize that, you know, you are the issue and you are poisoning the entire Democratic Party, then it's leadership to step down. But he hasn't. And I think that's really, a lot of people, Madigan is a lot of things. I think a lot of people make him out as more than he actually is. He's a human, as our colleague Rich Miller pointed out this morning in his, you know, Capital Facts, Private Facts. But like, I think a lot of people respect him, but, you know, or have revered him in, you know, for many, many years. Even if they didn't necessarily like him, they respected what he did for the caucus and for Democratic candidates and for Democratic causes.
Yeah, but, my good friend Chris Wetterick.
The issue.
My good friend Chris Wetterick, who was a State House reporter for the State Journal Register some years ago, once said that people look on the speaker as though he's some combination of Emperor Palpatine and Gandalf, which is, of course, the big bad guy from Star Wars and the big good guy from Lord of the Rings. Rick, we need to take a break in about a minute here, but I do want to fast forward to where we are today, right? The House began deliberating over who was going to be speaker. Madigan did not have the votes, right? I mean, this is a simple math equation at this point?
Simple math. There's 73 members of the House Democratic Caucus coming in to be sworn in on Wednesday. You need 60 votes to be Speaker. The first balloting for in the closed-door caucus was Madigan with 51. So 9 votes short. We knew there were 19 opponents. We knew he was at least 6 votes short. That number grew to 51. It's still far and away more votes than he had from his challengers. But things have changed since then. A couple of things overnight, including as a result of Madigan saying that he was suspending his campaign.
All right, well, that's a great tease. We will talk about what changed overnight as a result of Madigan suspending his campaign when we come back. We're speaking with Rick Pearson, political reporter at the Chicago Tribune, and Hannah Meisel, who's a statehouse reporter for NPR Illinois public radio station WUIS. If you have questions about this possible end of the speaker's power in Springfield, or at least his time as speaker in Springfield, the number to call is 800-222-9455. We can take your questions at 800-222-9455. More on what's happening in the Illinois General Assembly coming up after a break. You're listening to The 21st. Stay with us. This is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about the Illinois General Assembly's lame duck session. It's scheduled to go through midday tomorrow, Wednesday. The big action involves the Black Caucus's legislative agenda. That's on the policy side. But there's also a big political story, which is that House Democrats are deciding who will be the speaker. This is usually a foregone conclusion. The answer has been House Speaker Michael J. Madigan since 1983, for all but 2 years at least, when the Republicans regained control of the House in the mid-90s. But for the first time, Madigan doesn't have the votes to be speaker. And Rick, you alluded to this before the break. Madigan suspended his campaign for speaker, but did not withdraw. What does that mean?
Well, what I've been told by people close to Madigan is that knowing the speaker, people view him as the smartest political guy in the room, that this is kind of a long play here, that let the others see if they can find somebody that they can rally 60 votes behind. And if they can't, then I'm here. Come talk to me. I've done it before. I think that's the only play that he's got right now. You have the new developments where Legislative Black Caucus, it's 22 House members, 21 of them had been backing Speaker Madigan. Now 22 of them are supporting Emmanuel Chris Welch, state rep from Hillside, Black Caucus member, as speaker. We'll see how that plays out in this, because sure, that's the Black Caucus, very influential, very powerful. And of course, as you've said, they have a very big agenda that they're trying to get passed through in this lame duck session. We'll see how that plays into things. So here again, you need 60 votes. You've got the women, various women's groups taking advantage of the fact that there are so many women in the House Democratic Caucus saying the speaker needs to be a woman, vote for a woman. You've got Ann Williams, who in the first round of balloting got 18 votes. Can she grow that number? I kind of looked at Madigan's statement as saying, when you look at the diversity in that caucus, everybody's going to have a candidate. None of them on their own are going to get to 60 without some kind of agreement and coalition building. And frankly, I think that's what today is all about.
Yeah, Hannah, I was going to ask you, what is next? What happens between now and Wednesday at noon when the new General Assembly is scheduled to be gaveled in?
I mean, they'll either come to a consensus or they'll kind of fall into chaos. But, you know, as I read the Constitution, they have to, so the Secretary of State has the responsibility to convene to the 102nd General Assembly and swear them in, and then they're supposed to vote for a speaker. And then, as you read the House rules, nothing can be done legislatively until there's a speaker. And so risking not having a speaker at, you know, noon tomorrow means that days, weeks of, you know, just stalemate. And, you know, the General Assembly, like you mentioned earlier, hasn't met since May. They were planning to meet more regularly this spring. But, you know, there's plenty to do. The state is facing multiple crises. And, you know, like I said, risking not having a speaker at noon, that's going to be, you know, depending on how long it drags out, that could also hurt the caucus, too, in the future. I mean,
right.
When you prioritize power over, you know, actual issues, that's never a good thing that voters see. But, you know, voters also, they want to get rid of the speaker. And when you have folks like Chris Welch and like Jay Hoffman, who's also emerged, he's from the Metro East area, been a legislator 3 decades, very good ties to labor and trial lawyers, which are big funders of the Democrats in Illinois, you know, that could also be toxic. And so these women say, well, you know, we're the fresh option, you know, we're the option to lead things forward. But I talked to Madigan loyalists yesterday, and they're willing to stick with Madigan until the bitter end because they really just don't feel that anyone else has the know-how.
Well, I won't ask you to make predictions unless one of you wants to volunteer one about what's going to happen in the next 24 hours. Maybe I can ask it this way, though. Rick, if there is a new speaker, do you think things would change in the dynamics of the Illinois House? I mean, would legislation be more likely to move freely? Would there be more openness to the press? I mean, I played a soundbite from the speaker that was from August, or maybe it was spring, but 2018, mid 2018. And I have, you know, that's probably as much tape as I've gotten from him in the past couple of years. I can't remember the last time he's actually sat down for an interview with anyone. We've put in multiple requests. I know other outlets have. But, you know, I don't want to harp on the press aspect of this. But, I mean, would there be a new day in Springfield, do you think?
I wouldn't necessarily go into that broad of a statement, but I think things certainly would change because Madigan has been, in many respects, a status quo person in when it comes to dealing with power, dealing with the media. Certainly one of the things that rank and file lawmakers have chafed about is they're limited in the number of bills they can move. You know, I think regardless of who is speaker, and even if Madigan retains the speakership, there's going to have to be changes there about transparency, allowing members to move their initiatives more freely. Madigan's the gatekeeper. He controls everything. Rank and file's done with that.
Okay, well, time will tell, as we say in public radio. Before we leave, we need to wrap this conversation here. But Hannah, I did mention the Black, and I think you mentioned, we've all mentioned the Black Caucus agenda. There were four big items. We don't really have time to do justice to it. What is the sort of overall posture of that, just briefly? Where do things stand? What still needs to be done? And is it looking likely, looking less likely? How would you rate it right now?
Sure. All four pillars, there's criminal justice reform, healthcare, economic opportunity, and education, have already passed out of the Senate. And last night, the education bill, which is considered the least controversial of the bills, passed the House. You know, there was a lot of jockeying back and forth. There's a lot of things taken out of these bills, watered down to be more palatable, not necessarily to Republicans, because, you know, not sure that they would vote for these things anyway, but to the more moderate Democrats, make it more palatable and likely to pass, because especially in the criminal justice reform, that got a lot of police unions up in arms, and police unions, especially in Chicago and, you know, South suburbs, they are a big deal, and they're a big deal to those Chicago Democrats.
Okay. We're going to have to leave it there. We will continue to follow this. You can follow Hannah Meisel's reporting on the very public radio station on which you are listening to the 21st right now. She's a State House reporter based at NPR Illinois, WUIS in Springfield. We've also been joined by Rick Pearson, chief political reporter at the Chicago Tribune. You can follow his writing at chicagotribune.com. And I should mention to listeners, we are going to have another conversation with some other State House reporters on Thursday when we'll see. Maybe this is wrapped up by then. Maybe it's not. Hannah, Rick, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, Brian.